This is Gamerverse, all things gaming, geeky, and good. Welcome to Gamerverse. I'm your host, Erica, and today we're going to be talking about the history of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I'm going to start this episode off by giving you a background story of the origin of Daredevil. And you're probably wondering, why does Daredevil have anything to do with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? Believe it or not, their entire origin story is a complete parody of Daredevil's origin story. And you kind of have to understand it if you're going to understand where they took their variances and kind of their tongue-in-cheek homages. In the Daredevil franchise, when Matt Murdock was still a young boy, a truck carrying radioactive chemicals happened to spill onto him, causing him to become blind, but highly heightened all of his other senses. Right after this event, he also acquired his mentor, Stick, who was also blind, but taught him how to fight and use his new abilities. The primary bad guy in Daredevil is called the Hand, and they are basically a secret ninja clan that goes around fighting everybody, and Daredevil's usually trying to stop them. Anyone who knows anything about Ninja Turtles already can kind of see where these parallels are going, but I'll spell it out for you. So for the very first Ninja Turtles story laid out by Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird, who are the creators of Ninja Turtles, they highly borrowed from this origin, but really as a parody. And what I mean by this is the scenes are actually very similar, but something slightly different happens. So in their version, there is a boy who sort of is meant to represent Matt Murdock, walking down the street, and when the barrels of radioactive material fall this time, they kind of bounce off the boy and end up falling into the bowl full of turtles instead. This is also where we get introduced right after to Splinter. Splinter is a direct character reference to Stick, and Splinter becomes their master and mentor, just like Stick did for Matt Murdock. The primary bad guys in Ninja Turtles are called the Foot, again an homage to the Hand, and they too are ninjas. These ninja clans are going around working for the ultimate bad guy, the Shredder. And there's been a few different stories on how Shredder is directly connected to the Turtles and to Splinter, because they do alter depending on if it's the comics, the movies, or the video games. So let's start off with, where did the Ninja Turtles come from? Okay, so you've already sort of realized that a lot of the Ninja Turtle backstory is a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek joke, and the origin story of how they were originally created kind of follows the same sort of feeling. Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird in 1983 were struggling artists living in the US. So the whole thing started as a joke. Eastman drew a turtle standing on its hind legs, wearing a mask, and carrying nunchucks. So I guess technically you can say Michelangelo was the very first Ninja Turtle ever created. This piece of paper sort of got passed back and forth between the two of them until they ended up with four unique characters and the tagline at the top saying the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Just as a side note, the very first version of this picture sold in auction for $71,000. So Ninja Turtles actually really did start out as a grassroots effort. And what I mean by that is they did not start at a major publication. In fact, Eastman and Laird created their own publication just to get the Ninja Turtles going. In 1984, Eastman and Laird created a new company, Mirage Studios. This was more of a name than anything else because basically a Mirage Studios, it was just Laird's living room. They pulled all of their money together between Eastman, Laird, and Eastman's uncle so that they could do their very first print run of their first issue of the Ninja Turtles. On their very first issue, they only printed 3,000 copies, and what little money they had left, they ran an ad in Comic Buyer's Guide magazine, which was an industry publication, hoping that it might get some attention and get picked up by larger distributors. Funny enough, thanks to that one ad, comic distributors across the country actually started calling, and Mirage sold all 3,000 copies within a few weeks. So they started having orders coming in quickly by that point. They printed off another 6,000 copies, which easily sold no problem. Within less than half a year, they'd already made all their money back, paid back Eastman's uncle, and had a little bit of profit to spare. Not bad for the first print of a comic issue. Although this comic was meant to be a one-shot, single issue, and it really was a self-contained story, they realized that they might be onto something, and they decided to keep going. So, in 1985, they completed issue number 2, and quickly received 15,000 orders. The second edition turned out to be so popular that distributors asked for another 30,000 issues to be printed of issue number 2 and an entire second printing of issue number 1. By the time they were ready to put out issue number 3, they already had orders totaling more than 50,000 copies, and sales continued to climb. Sales sort of peaked around issue number 8, but at that point we're talking about 135,000 copies of an issue. The very first issue of the comic actually only sold for $1.50, but if you were happening to try to get a first edition print these days, you'd probably cost you in the neighborhood of anywhere from $2,000 to $4,000. So TMNT, or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, ran under Mirage Studio banner from 1984 until 1999 and actually had 75 regular issues, as well as dozens of miniseries, one-shots, and limited series spin-off titles, because they had a lot of guest stars. Even Archie Comics used the cartoon Turtles for 72 issues of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle Adventures, which ran from 1988 to 1995. The Mirage Turtles moved over to Image Comics, and Image Comics is owned by DC. The series ran for 13 issues and a mini-series before being canceled in 1999. While at Image, the series took on some odd turns. So, just for example why this maybe wasn't the most popular of run, Splinter became a bat, Donatello changed into a cyborg, Leonardo lost a hand, and Raph became the new Shredder. Now, the last part I actually find vaguely interesting because of some of the power dynamics, but I'm gonna say if you were a fan of the series at the time, you might have found these changes a little disturbing. When Peter Laird brought the Ninja Turtles back to Mirage in 2001, he pretty much retconned all of this back out and completely ignored it. His new series ran until 2010, with 30 issues in print and 31 still only available online. Although the series was not officially concluded, there apparently is no more plans to continue this particular run. So at this time, the comics are now owned by major publisher IDW, who does a lot of comics and a lot of board games. And if you happen to be interested, they produce some very beautiful looking omnibuses of the entire original Turtle run, which if you're interested in trying to get into Ninja Turtles, I would highly recommend having a peek at those. To be really honest, as much as a lot of us absolutely love the Ninja Turtles, we usually love them as children, which is kind of both funny and ironic if you understand where the original stories came from, because the original stories were definitely not for children. The Turtles diced up and killed enemies very easily. They spouted curse words. And all I really kind of have to say is Casey Jones. Now, if you're not sure who Casey Jones is, he looks like he should actually be more in a horror movie than necessarily kind of a fantasy sci-fi comic. He's the guy who runs around with the hockey mask, beating everybody up, no matter how big or small they are, with hockey sticks, baseball bats, cricket bats, and anything else he can get his hands on. Don't get me wrong, I love the character. But even if you saw the movies as a kid, you might realize this is a pretty rough character. So why did the image change so dramatically to what we saw in the cartoons and the movies that kind of came after this? So, Playmate Toys expressed an interest in producing the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle action figures in 1986, but the comic's PG-13 attitude wouldn't fit with Playmate's 4 to 8-year-old target base. Plus, part of the Playmate's marketing was an animated cartoon. And you have to understand that in the late 80s, early 90s, censorship was really heavy on kids' cartoons, so they had to make sure that whatever they produced was going to get past the censors. So this set Playmate Toys into trying to soften up the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. There were a lot of changes made, but interestingly enough, most of the changes that happened might be why you loved the Ninja Turtles as a kid, but kind of made Eastman and Laird a little upset. So let's get into some of these changes. The first one is that the Turtles became these wisecracking jokesters obsessed with pizza. That's right, that was not part of the original story. The pizza thing came as part of the rebranding. They sort of toned down the Shredder to make him a bit more of a bumbling sort of classic villain, and members of the Foot Clan were now robots, so the parents wouldn't complain that the Turtles were too violent. And instead of saying things like damn, the Turtles now spouted catchphrases like turtle power and cowabunga. I think the major change, besides, I'm gonna say honestly, the pizza thing that came out of this, was that their costumes got a bit of an upgrade or a bit of a distinctive difference. In the comics, the interior art was in black and white, but the color covers always showed the Turtles all wearing the exact same red mask. The only distinguishing difference was the weapons that they carried. As a way of sort of de-emphasizing that their weapons were their primary way of figuring which turtle was which, they gave them color-coded masks. And that's where we got the orange for Michelangelo, red for Raphael, purple for Donatello, and blue for Leonardo. As one more small addition, especially if you ever had the toys, you would know that this was actually part of the action figure. They were each given a belt around their waist that had their initial in the front. If you did own the Ninja Turtle toys, you would know this part was really easy to lose. Though Eastman and Laird had final say on the changes of their creation, neither of them were apparently very thrilled about some of the concessions that they had to come to with the Playmates agreement. In an interview that Eastman did in 1998 for the Comics Journal, he's quoted as saying, "The resolution at the end of the day, even when Peter and I both agreed that, well, there's some stuff we really don't like, and some stuff that we wish we hadn't said yes to, stuff that they wanted to do, but we said we'll always have our black and white comics to tell the kinds of stories we want to tell." To this day, you'll still hear Laird talking about this, and he will not pretend that he was happy with the changes or where the characters were taken during this time, which is kind of interesting because I have to say, as someone who grew up with the cartoon is what made me fall in love with the Ninja Turtles in the first place, and start to buy all the toys and go see the movies and all those other things. So it's kind of interesting to hear that the creator is unhappy with what essentially brought in probably the majority of the fans that are out there today. And I'm not trying to exclude anyone who goes back to the comic days, but I gotta think that the larger fan base came more from the cartoon than necessarily the comics. But I want to be clear about what Laird really objected to in the cartoon. Besides some of the changes we've already mentioned, he didn't like the character direction that some of these people took. So for example, he hated the moronic henchmen like Bebop and Rocksteady, which I think some of you might not be so happy with, as you might have probably enjoyed those characters. The Shredder would have been seriously a lot more malevolent. April would not have been a reporter and constantly needed to be rescued by the Ninja Turtles, which is kind of a nice thought to think that maybe that she would have been more powerful in her own right and not necessarily always been the damsel in distress. But his major sticking point, the one thing that, funny enough, again, I would say is so synonymous with the Turtles now and the thing he hated the most, that they became these characters who were ridiculously obsessed with pizza. As a funny aside, they also wrote into the series that Shredder owned a pizza business called Ninja Pizza, and Laird wasn't exactly thrilled with that one either. So let's talk a little bit now about the cartoons, and there were more than one. Before Playmates was willing to commit to a full toy line of Turtles, they tested the waters with a 5-part cartoon miniseries. This debuted in 1987. They aired it about 3 times before it finally caught on kind of with its target market, but it gained traction really quickly, and Playmates ordered more episodes and the show started to air from 1988 to 1996 with a total of 188 episodes. The show featured voice actors that if you were watching cartoons at the time, you probably would have recognized from other series. Transformers is a great example of this considering 2 people basically did every single voice on that show. But that was kind of common practice in the 80s, was that to try to get as many actors to do as many programs under the same umbrella at the same time. So a lot of times your favorite characters were voiced by the same people. Raphael was played by Rob Paulsen, who later on went to go voice Pinky and Yakko Warner from the Animaniacs. Townsend Coleman played Michelangelo, who actually later on went to go voice the Tick. Cam Clark was a veteran anime dubber at the time, and he actually voiced Leonardo. So if you were into anime, you might recognize his voice from, let's say, North American releases of things like Akira. Barry Gordon played Donatello, but his resume goes all the way back to the Leave It to Beaver days, so he's been in TV for a very long time. And as a fun little tidbit, because some of you might not remember this, James Avery, who plays Uncle Phil on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, was the Shredder. So this is where things got a little bit weird with the cartoon, is that there was a bit of controversy with, of all people, the Howdy Doody show. Okay, so how did this happen? Because these guys are not even in the same era. Laird and Eastman were being sued for $5 million by Buffalo Bob Smith, who was the host of the Howdy Doody show, because he claimed that they stole cowabunga from him. Yes, the word was used first on his show, and it was the catchphrase of the Native American character named Chief Thunder Thud. However, it's been adopted by surfers since the 1960s. So after months of legal battle, Smith ended up settling for $50,000. The Turtles have returned to the animated world a few times over now. So you might have seen the 4Kids Entertainment run that was done from 2003 to 2009. This one was actually co-created with Peter Laird, and he had a more active hand in the production, which resulted in the series that was coming a lot closer to the original comic books. So even though Laird was still an active part of the Ninja Turtles, you're probably wondering what happened to Eastman. Well, Eastman sort of cashed out of the franchise in 2000, and he sold his entire entire stake to Laird. Laird, in turn, turned the rights over to Viacom in 2009. And a few years later, in 2012, Viacom, through Nickelodeon, released their new CGI cartoon that you might have seen recently. Just as a fun connection to the original show, Ralph Paulson, who played Raphael in 1988, went on to play Donatello in the new 2012 incarnation. All right, now we have to talk a little bit about the toys and action figures. My brother and I personally had an unhealthy obsession with the Ninja Troll toys. We both really, really loved them. I remember having the Sewer Surfer. It's like a skateboard that has a wind turbine on the back of a hovercraft so that they could go through the sewers more quickly. And it shot out pizzas from the front as discs. I remember having the large Raphael figure that stood, I think that stood around about 15 inches tall. Sadly, my golden retriever at the time chewed off one of his toes. I remember having multiple of the Ninja Turtle action figures. And as I said, it was quite easy to lose that belt with the initial on it. My brother's favorite character, I believe, was Raphael. I always had more a soft spot for Michelangelo and Donatello. And I'll get into why Donatello actually probably was your favorite if you played the video games in just a few minutes. From 1988 to 1997, Playmates produced around 400 different Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle figures, as well as dozens of vehicles and playsets. For the first 4 years of Turtle Mania, about $1.1 billion worth of toys were sold. Again, I was a little bit part of that problem. And the Ninja Turtles became the number three top-selling toy of all time, only followed behind G.I. Joe and Star Wars. So thanks to the Nickelodeon cartoon, the Ninja Turtles are back on the toy shelves today. Obviously, there's been some design changes, and we'll talk in a few minutes about the movies, because especially the new movies, there's been some radical design changes of how they look. I personally like the older look a little bit better. I like when they look more like turtles. I don't mind the Nickelodeon run either, because in many ways they just sort of thinned out the characters and maybe made them look a little bit more teenage-like. I have to say though, I am not a fan of the way that they looked in the new movies. All right, so let's talk about the movies a little bit before we get to the video games. The first Ninja Turtle movie was in 1990 when the Turtles hit the big screen with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. That was the name of the movie. They had a budget of about $13.5 million, which isn't bad for what would be considered kind of a kid's movie, but they raked in well over $200 million. The director was Steve Barron, who would not have been known at the time for movies. He actually would have been way more synonymous with some pretty well-known music videos. So for example, on his resume, he has things like Michael Jackson's Billie Jean. He has A-ha's Take On Me, which if you haven't seen that video, go watch it right now. And the computer animated Dire Straits' Money for Nothing. What I really liked about the first movie was the turtles themselves, was the costumes. And you have to give that full credit to Jim Henson's Creature Shop, which used state-of-the-art control systems called Puppetectronics, which I'm assuming might be a trademark term, to bring the turtle costumes to life. So to create these facial expressions, you would have one puppeteer that was controlling each of the turtles. The puppeteer would use a joystick for the eyes, an electronic glove to work the jaw, and a headset with infrared sensors tracking the puppeteer's face to work the lips. I think in a lot of ways, this is what really brought the characters to life. And what I want to draw a comparison here to would be Yoda from the original Star Wars trilogy. The reason I say this is the Jim Henson Creature Shop invented Yoda as well. And there's something very different about seeing this physical moving Yoda and physical moving Ninja Turtles than maybe the future incarnations, which became these CG versions that just don't have the same feel. The cast included Elias Cotes as Casey Jones, Corey Feldman as the voice of Donatello, and Kevin Clash, who is better known as the former voice of Elmo, was actually Splinter. What was kind of interesting about the first movie, too, is that they were trying to do the foot right, actually make them look like ninjas. So in an effort to do this, they hired real-life martial arts expert Toshishiro Obata. Interestingly enough, he actually created his own style of Japanese swordsmanship called Shinkendo, which is currently being taught in something like 90 JoJo's around the world. So just a fun little side note there. The film spawned two sequels, which you may or may not have seen. In 1991, The Secret of the Ooze came out, and I'm sorry, I don't think anybody forget the Ninja Turtle rap that came from that. Ninja, ninja, rap, go, 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 ninja, go, ninja, go, go, ninja, go. Thank you, Vanilla Ice. In 1993, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles went back in time to feudal Japan and decided to become samurai. Obviously, the sequels didn't do quite as well as the originals, but to be honest, they were still kind of fun. The movies took a really long hiatus until the relaunch of the cartoons in the 2000s, and that's when we got the computer animated TMNT. This cast included Chris Evans, who you'd probably know as Captain America, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragons, Zhang Ziyi, Kevin Smith, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Patrick Stewart, and Lawrence Fishburne. On a budget of $34 million, the film made $95 million at the box office. I think a lot of people might have skipped over this one. And I'm gonna say, as much as it maybe didn't have the most compelling plotline ever, it was maybe a little more basic. This movie had really good action sequences, and I'm surprised it's not a little bit more recognized. The Turtles returned again in 2014 for the live-action film directed by Jonathan Liebenson from producer Michael Bay. This one, I think this is the movie that nearly broke the internet, and a lot of that has to do with Michael Bay and maybe a bit of his own, I'll say, ignorance. You might have heard when this movie was first being announced that Michael Bay had taken some large liberties with the background stories of the Turtles. They were no longer going to be Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, they were just going to be Ninja Turtles, and apparently they were going to be aliens from another planet. Obviously, fans were not happy with this idea, and I'll be honest, it's really ridiculous. Why aliens? Only Bay would come back to a fandom with a response of, take a chill pill, and expect that to turn out okay. However, the negative feedback was astronomical, and this movie hadn't even come out yet. In fact, it barely started production. So Bay eventually put the project on hold to have a rewrite. With the new script, the additional Teenage Mutant was added to the title, and the film began shooting in April of 2013, with now people such as Megan Fox as April O'Neil, William Fichtner as the Shredder, and Will Arnett as the cameraman Vernon Fenwick. The Turtles and Splinter are completely CGI creations in this, and this kind of goes back to what I was talking about before with Yoda and the Ninja Turtles and Jim Henson's Creature Creation Shop. There really is something different about a tangible creature on a screen compared to something that is essentially a drawn figure. This movie did get a sequel as well. The first of the relaunched Ninja Turtle movies was released in 2014 in the summer. The movie pretty much got mostly negative reviews from critics, but to be honest, it earned just under $500 million on a $125 million budget. It was the highest grossing film in the series. Again, my own personal opinion is that's kind of sad, but if you're a fan of this particular movie line, you probably disagree with me. The sequel to this movie, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows, came out in 2016 and got a closer response to what I kind of assumed was going to happen with the first movie. This one only grossed about $245 million on a budget of $135 million. Part of me thinks that a lot of why the first movie grossed so highly, even though it had such negative reviews, was that so many of us just were happy that the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were back. There was such a long hiatus for most of us who were fans in, let's say, the 80s and 90s, that we craved to see them again. And even though there was a lot of liberties taken with the way that they were going to look, as well as some of the backstory, I think people just wanted to get to experience the Ninja Turtles again. But let's just say once bitten, twice shy, and it probably accounts for the low numbers on number two. Just before I talk about the video games, I want to talk to you guys a little bit about some of the never happened possibilities for Ninja Turtles that you probably never heard of. All right, so let's start off with a live action film that was supposed to be called TMNT: The Next Mutation. This was supposed to go into pre-production in 1994, but was never actually made. In this movie, the mutagen in their bodies would have affected the turtles' physiology. According to Laird, Leonardo could change his skin into nearly impenetrable chrome-like surface. Michelangelo could project human features onto his body, which allowed him to blend with the surface world. Donatello gained psychic powers, but at the cost of his eyesight, and Raphael morphed into Raptor Raph, basically a monster with long sharp teeth and foot-long claws. I'm really not sure where that one came from. And Splinter would have had the ability to change into a giant, muscled, super rat mutant creature. Part of me is really happy that this didn't happen, but it reminds me a lot of the Image comic run that did similar strange changes that got retconned out pretty quickly as soon as the series was over. That wasn't the only proposed script for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. All right, so this is according to Eastman and Laird, because there really isn't any other evidence of this happening. But they both say that in the early days of the comic book, they were approached by New World Pictures to do a comedy adaptation using stand-up comics Gallagher, Sam Kinison, Bobcat Goldthwait, and Billy Crystal, all dressed in turtle shells and green face makeup. There's a part of me that actually wants to know what this would have looked like, because that's probably one of the most ridiculous lineups of people I've ever heard of. But I'm also kind of glad that it never actually existed, because, well, I'm sure it just would have been a mess. There was one more project that Laird and Eastman talk about, and this one is maybe as weird as them having all the strange abilities. So in this one, it was going to be an R-rated film that featured things like roller skating semi-nude nuns with Uzis battling the turtles. Not exactly sure which studio planned that one, but again, glad it didn't happen. And now we're on to the video games. I personally owned the Ninja Turtle game for the NES, and that game was almost impossible to beat. If you've ever played this game, it's actually considered one of the hardest games that ever came out for the NES console, though interestingly enough, it is one of the top sellers that was not created by Nintendo. Roughly 4 million copies of this game were sold. Okay, so if you've never played this game before, it is impossibly hard. You can get through the first levels pretty easily, but by the time you get to the dam, where for some reason all of the seaweed is electrified, you're gonna lose most of your characters. The one character you cannot lose when you're playing this game is Donatello, because his reach with his bow is insane. And unless you still have him when you get to the city, which is right after the dam, it's almost impossible to take it rocksteady. There was also some really annoying parts of this game where, for example, there'd be a little space that you need to jump across, but it turns out you can't physically jump over it. You have to actually just keep walking and the character will jump for you. It probably took you a really long time to figure this out, and if you want to hear a fantastic rant about how annoying this is, check out the Angry Video Game Nerd if you've never seen him and his episode on the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle game. He expresses himself very well on how annoying this aspect was. I personally could not get past the city when you're finally getting to drive around in the turtle van, and I have no idea why foot ninjas that walk around can somehow crunch your car and take a life, but again, that game was really hard. The most popular of the games, besides the NES version, was actually the arcade version, which many of you probably did get to play. The gameplay was a little bit easier, and at least you could be multiple characters and play with your friends. If you're interested, you can find great ROM versions of these games online and try them out for yourself. So I want to add just a little bit about some of the board games that came out, because there's been some recent developments there too. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles have had a lot of versions of games come out. Obviously, there's been things like Monopoly. They've also had their own mini hockey table version called Sewer Hockey. I remember having a terrible spin and move game called the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Ready for Battle game. And I'm pretty sure this game just kind of got a slight freshen up and came out in two other incarnations. One called the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Pizza Power game, and then the UK version called the Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles The Power Game. Recently though, IDW, who's the comic book distributor and, as I mentioned, a board game publisher, has started putting out more adult version turtle games. So a recently kickstarted game, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Shadows of the Past, was a really successful campaign and includes some great looking minis. This game has a lot closer connection to the comics and was made by designer Kevin Wilson. IDW currently has another Ninja Turtles game in the works. This one is called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Showdown, and it's a team game for 2 to 6 players. This one is Bebop and Rocksteady versus the Turtle, and that's soon to come out from somebody that I co-design games with, designer Daryl Andrews. Alright, so here's some of the other funny stuff that got attached to the Ninja Turtle universe. Did you know that the Ninja Turtles went on tour? So in 1990, Pizza Hut, who somehow in the 80s and 90s got involved in all of these crazy movie franchises, sponsored the Coming Out of Their Shell Tour, a stage musical that featured the Turtles as a rock band. The show debuted at the Radio City Music Hall and went on a 40-city tour across America. If you happen to miss this show, apparently there was a live recording made with a special making of video that was available on VHS. There was also a soundtrack produced for record stores, but you could get a copy for free at Pizza Hut with the purchase of any large one-topping pizza and commemorative collector's cup. Another good Ninja Turtle story is the Legend of the Fifth Turtle. This actually was a discussion that happened. Eastman and Laird heard more than once that if 4 Ninja Turtles were good, then 5 Ninja Turtles must be better. Although they really resisted this idea, The duo did come up with a fifth Ninja Turtle concept that almost came to be. There was a never-produced fourth Ninja Turtle movie, again before the reboots in 2000, where they created a fifth character called Kirby, named after their idol, Jack Kirby, who is a legendary comic book artist. The characters would have been introduced via a magic crystal that was going to bring drawings to life. I'll be fair, they did introduce magic in the Turtle universe in number 3, considering that they had to travel through time, but I'm not sure how fans would have responded to a drawing come to life being the fifth turtle named Kirby. Though I have to say, Kirby was kind of interesting looking. If you get a chance, there was a concept drawing done by Eastman in 94, where Kirby kind of has a short sword that's handle has spikes coming out of it, and he had more of an armored look. To be fair, I have no idea what color his mask was going to be. One interesting thing about him, though, is that he had more striped skin and actually had 4 fingers instead of 3. This was not the only time a fifth turtle was suggested, and you may or may not have seen the Ninja Turtles The Next Mutation, no relation to the unproduced film, live-action TV series that ran for less than a year. The show was produced by Saban Entertainment, which you probably recognize as the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers producer. This show featured the same cheesy rubber-suited production values as the Power Rangers. The series introduced Venus de Milo, a female Ninja Turtle, to complete the group. This unfortunately also came complete with shell breasts. So how they retconned her into the show is they said that previously she was the unseen fifth turtle in the bowl when the ooze was spilt on them. The show was obviously not a hit with fans, which is probably why most of you have never even heard of this. And it was even less of a hit with Laird, who absolutely hated it. Laird's been asked a few times what the number one regrets he has on Ninja Turtles were, and the most likely answer you are to hear is that he truly regrets this one incarnation, the Ninja Turtles Next Mutation TV show. I'm gonna leave this episode off with some of the things you might not have heard about that was happening in the UK when they tried to introduce Ninja Turtles there. So as harmless as the 1988 cartoon series was, it was still heavily edited for broadcast in the UK and much of Europe. And you're probably thinking to yourself, this show really wasn't overly violent. Again, even the Foot were all turned into robots, so nobody ever really got killed. It was sort of like the A-Team shooting at everybody and nobody ever got a bullet. They had really stringent censorship over in the UK, and many of the action scenes were trimmed so that the turtles didn't look like they were using their weapons as often. Michelangelo suffered the worst from this, and he was nearly cut out of the show, to be honest, because nunchucks were a restricted weapon, which meant his fight scenes were cut and replaced with him using a grappling hook instead. The name of the show was even changed to the Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles because the word ninja had violent connotations. If you are a toy collector, you may or may not know that there was an entire line of toys produced in the UK only with the Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles logo on it. So if you're missing something from your collection, you might want to have a look for those. This censorship continued with the 1990 movie. As we talked about, Michelangelo uses nunchucks as his primary weapon. So if you remember the original movie, there's even a scene where he uses sausages as a nunchuck. They trimmed this scene down to almost nothing. There was a lot of heavy editing done in this movie so that it could actually get its PG rating. The original unedited release that was the same as the North American release wasn't really allowed until the late 90s when they finally sort of let up a bit on their censorship and let the original movie shine the way it was intended. Here's another piece of controversy you might not have heard about. And this one gets really silly because the Ninja Turtles came under attack by the American Farm Bureau. And you're thinking, why the hell has Ninja Turtles have anything to do with American farming? This all came down to a Random House kids book called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles ABCs for a Better Planet. The book covers environmental issues, including a statement saying some animals are injected with cancer-causing artificial growth hormones, and that much of the world's grain goes to feed cattle rather than starving people. It also happens to mention that pesticides can remain on fruits and vegetables even after they get to the supermarket. So the American Farm Bureau was incredibly pissed off with this book. They were reported as saying that they were concerned that the publisher would stoop to using a children's publication to advance such a biased and incorrect view of American agriculture. It's kind of unclear if pressure from the AFB actually caused it, but this book was never reprinted. If you're a big Ninja Turtle collector, this is definitely a book to be on the lookout for because it is a very rare thing to find. I think no matter matter where you entered into the Ninja Turtle franchise, there's something to love about the Ninja Turtles. You can love the action, you can love the weapons, you can love the silliness, you could love the pizza loving. Whatever it is, there is something for everybody in the Ninja Turtles. You just might want to be careful where you start with them. If you're an older audience member and you want to get into Ninja Turtles, I'd highly recommend you go to the comic books, the recent board games, or the video games. If you're a little younger entering into this, I would highly recommend still watching the cartoons. The original cartoon was a lot of fun. The Four Kids one was decent. I would say the Nickelodeon one is a lot darker and maybe more teenage-like, but I think that the universe genuinely has something for everybody. There are two other really great things that you can check out if you want to know just a little bit more about the Ninja Turtles. There was a documentary that came out called Turtle Power, The Definitive History of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and there's a really, really good article called The Complete History of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles by Rob Lemel. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Gamerverse podcast, all about the history of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. You can follow us on Twitter at GamerverseCast, and you can follow me personally, Erica, at Frenemy Games, and get an insider's glimpse into my tabletop game designing adventures. You can follow this podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, and YouTube. Please leave us a review on iTunes and show us a little love, and maybe help other fantastic geeks like yourself find us. If you're interested in helping the podcast to keep going, please support our Patreon at patreon.com/gamereversepodcast. You can email us at thegamereversepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, gamers, this is Game Reverse, all things gaming, geeky, and good.